coming up on this week's mini episode of the Broken Brain Podcast.
If you want to make long-term behavior change for most people, you've got to start small.
Hi, everyone. Drew Prode here, host of the Broken Brain Podcast. How many times have you attempted to start working out consistently, eat more veggies, or incorporate something new into your routine, but you struggled to make it stick? It's easy to start, but it's hard to stick. It's hard to be consistent with things. We've all been there. I'm there regularly because I'm always trying new things. My guest on today's mini episode, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, a good friend of mine, and Dr. BJ Fogg share with us the secret formula for creating new habits that stick and how it can not only be easy, but enjoyable and rewarding. That's the key, rewarding. You'll see why. Let's listen in, starting with my interview with my good friend, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, one of the most influential medical doctors in the UK and the host of the most listened to health podcast in UK and Europe, Feel Better, Live More. A core premise behind your book, Feel Better in Five, is the five. As you mentioned, it's 5 minutes. And what you noticed as I was reading the book and preparing for this podcast and all our conversations, what you noticed is that that extreme approach doesn't really work for a lot of people and often leads to a place where usually like 3 weeks in, you know, 30 days in, 5 weeks in, somebody asks you, hey, how are those New Year's resolutions going? And many people here who are listening probably use this same response. It's like, oh, like I kind of dropped off. I got busy, right? I didn't have enough time. Talk to us about why that was a big part of the inspiration of how to figure out how to help your patients actually do things that are achievable and doable in their day with the time that they have.
Yeah, the best way of answering that, Drew, is to tell you a quick patient story from my clinic, because I think this patient really encompasses the whole approach in the book. Now, this is maybe 7 or 8 years ago. Okay, I was in a busy medical clinic, and a 42-year-old gentleman came in to see me, and he was suffering with the kind of problem that many people these days are complaining of. There'll be people listening to this podcast right now who are suffering with these complaints. He was a little bit overweight. He was struggling a bit with his mood, and he felt exhausted all the time. Okay, so three very common things. Now, we were chatting, and as I was, you know, unpacking his story, it was very clear to me that his lifestyle was contributing to a lot of his symptoms, right? So I discussed a number of options with him, and we, you know, we went through all kinds of things, but the one that he really liked was strength training. He says, "Doc, yeah, what strength training is going to do that for me? Right, I'm in. You know, I've not done strength training since I was a teenager. It used to make me feel really good, but you're saying it's going to help me with my energy. It might help me with my mood and with my weight. Right, I'd love to do that." I said, "Okay, great. Let's just start there then." And he said to me, "Shall I do 40 minutes 3 times a week in the gym, as I've read?" And I said, "Hey, look, if you can do that, that'll be amazing." So he said, "Yeah, I'm in," right? So I give him a follow-up appointment for 4 weeks' time. He walks out, big smile on his face, you know, standing tall, feeling motivated that he's got his plan of action. 4 weeks later, he comes in to see me. And I said, "Hey, how are you getting on?" And he looked a bit different. His shoulders were rolled over a little bit. And he spoke a bit softly. He said, "Hey, Doc, you know what, I've not really managed to go yet. You know, work's been really busy. It's been quite stressful. The gym's actually quite far from my work. So it's quite hard to get to and it's quite expensive. I've not done it yet." Okay. And he looked and felt like a complete failure, that he couldn't do what I'd asked him to do or what he thought he was going to do. I remember, Drew, in that moment, I did not think, why has he not done what I've asked him to do? I thought, Rangan, why have you given him advice? The advice you've given him clearly doesn't feel relevant to him in the context of his life. So I thought, okay, I've got to change it. I took my jacket off and I said, "Right, I'm going to teach you a 5-minute workout right now that you can just do without any equipment." He goes, "Okay." So I taught him these 5 exercises. I modified them for his ability level. I said, "What do you think? Can you do that?" He goes, "Yeah, no problem. Easy." I said, "Okay, can you do it 5 minutes twice a week in your kitchen?" And he said, "What, 10 minutes a week. Is that all you're asking me to do? I said, yeah, can you do that? He goes, yeah, easy. Of course I can do that. I said, okay, I'll see you in 4 weeks. So he goes out, I think a little bit confused with what I'd asked him to do. It wasn't what he was used to. 4 weeks later, he comes back in, Drew. And I remember when he came through the door, his chest is puffed out. He's standing up tall, big smile on his face. I said, how are you getting on? He goes, Doc, man, you told me to do 10 minutes a week, right? I love it so much. It makes me feel so good. I do it now for 10 minutes every evening before I have my evening meal. Now, Drew, he has done that for over 5 years. When he tried to do 40 minutes 3 times a week at the gym, he couldn't manage anything. But when I made it easy for him, he now does 70 minutes of strength training a week. 10 minutes, 7 days a week. Right, it becomes a part of his life. And what did that lead to? That led to what I talk about in the book. I call it the ripple effect. He started with that. That led to him changing his eating habits, sleeping better. Now, because I saw him recently, he does 10 minutes of breath work every morning when he wakes up. Right, this was a million miles away from where he was 7-8 years ago. But by starting small, by making him feel good about himself, he does more, not because I've told him to, not because I've asked him to, but because he wants to. And that's the secret to behavior change. And you can literally unpack the entire book in that story because the various elements of behavior change are all there. And so, you know, I'd love to share to people what were the secrets in what I asked him to do that actually worked? Because at the time, Drew, I did not know the science of behavior change. I was going on intuition and gut feeling as a clinician. It was only when I actually met BJ Fogg last year, you know, as I always do in LA, I was staying with you and I flew off to, I think, Santa Rosa, and I did sort of boot camp with BJ, and we just hit it off like a house on fire. And what we loved was the idea. He said, Rongan, what's really interesting, you're telling me things that you've figured out from 20 years clinical experience that my 20 years clinical research has shown me. It was this beautiful intersection of me as a clinician, what have I seen work with real patients, with real busy lives and families. It matched up, it married up beautifully with his research, which has shown if you want to make long-term behavior change, for most people, you've got to start small.
When it comes to change, tiny is mighty. Say that with me now. Tiny is mighty. There's no shame in starting small. And in fact, that's how often things get started. Small is how you build foundation. Start with 2 push-ups a day, not a 2-hour workout. Or start with 5 deep breaths each morning rather than trying to jump to an hour of meditation. Dr. BJ Fogg is a behavioral scientist with deep experience in innovation and teaching. He has personally coached over 40,000 people in forming new habits using his breakthrough method called Tiny Habits. I've done it before. It's fantastic. Let's listen in as BJ shares why breaking our goals down into incredibly simple steps is essential to staying motivated and sticking with them over the long run. Give us the elevator pitch for Tiny Habits and the approach.
Elevator pitch. It is the simplest, fastest way to create new habits, supported by my research of over 40,000 people who have done the method, who I coached personally, and measured results week after week. That's the elevator pitch, I guess. The way you do it, I kind of laugh because I'm looking at the book. It's like, there it is. But it can be summarized like this. Take any habit you want and make it really, really easy to do, ridiculously easy to do. So say you want to read more. Well, scale it back to be read a paragraph. Maybe it's read a sentence. Maybe it's just open the book. There was a summer where that was the habit. All I did was open the book. Then you find, where does that tiny version of that habit, where does that fit naturally in your life? And one of the breakthroughs I had in my work was understanding, what does it come after? Oh, so I open the book after I sit down on the patio in the evenings. So what you're doing is you're designing this very tiny behavior into your life. You're fitting it into your routine where it will fit naturally. just like you'll take a little seedling or a seed, and it's like, where will this seed take root and thrive? So, so it's a design process. So the tiny habit recipe becomes, after I sit down on the patio in the evenings, I will open my book. Now, some people think that's not very meaningful. And so they might say, well, I will open my book and read one paragraph. It's not one chapter. It has to be so simple, so easy to do, that even when you're sick or busy or stressed, you can still do the behavior. So you can be very, very consistent. The third piece, and all of these are hacks, making it tiny, reminding yourself by connect, I call it anchoring it to an existing routine, like sitting down on the patio. That's a hack, because you're not using alarms or post-it notes or whatever. You are using your existing routine to remind you. Then the third one is called celebration. You wire in the habit into your brain by deliberately causing yourself to feel a positive emotion. And I name the emotion, the feeling of success in the book, I name it shine. So you, and there's different ways to help yourself feel shine. So one thing I did with opening the book was my bookmark had this really cutesy smiley face on it. And when I opened the book, I looked at that smile face and I was like, good for you, BJ, you're reading, right? And that would create shine, which would help wire in the habit. If you're flossing, it could be after I brush, I will floss one tooth, and you could look in the mirror and smile and go, yep, that's how you do it, right? So you're acknowledging and embracing a feeling of success. It's that feeling, that emotion, that causes your brain to rewire and make that behavior more automatic, whether it's opening a book, flossing your teeth, doing push-ups, tidying the kitchen, and so on. So there's got the three hacks: the anchor, the behavior that you make really tiny, and then the celebration, how you wire it in.
And I want to start backwards, because you know, the celebration, I remember going to your workshop initially, and before that, reading a little bit about your work online. At the time, you didn't have a book. And I can remember really taking away from that and your tweets and the information I can get at the time is that people are just so damn hard on themselves, especially when it comes to change. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And I think you and I and most people listening to this, we all fall into this camp because we're high achievers. And we're expected, you know, to every day do better and better and better. And I grew up in a culture of you need to become perfect. You need to become perfect. And so when you're not perfect, or when you don't continue to achieve, it's very easy to not look at your progress, but look at the deficits, look at what you didn't do perfectly. And that's exactly the wrong way to transform your life. And so with tiny habits, and in this time of desperation, when I was stumbling across developing the method, what happened, and it was an accident. You know, I valued my teeth, and I thought, okay, BJ, you're going to floss one tooth. You already know how to floss all your teeth. That's not the issue. You need to learn how to floss automatically. So boom, it comes after you brush, you're going to floss one tooth. And then because things were so challenging in my life, I looked in the mirror and I would say victory. Because I thought, if everything else goes wrong today, which it could because it was a hard time, I got this done. I did this one thing. And then I recognized, so this didn't come out of me doing experiments or reading academic papers. I recognized the going, good for you, BJ. It was literally victory, I would say, victory. That had this power. And so I started doing more of it. And then a year later, when I started teaching it in 2011, I said, hey, everybody, do this thing, this celebration, declare victory. And then as it worked for other people, I started understanding it better. So you're causing this emotion and your brain goes, emotion serves lots of functions. And you and people listening to this are probably way more expert than I am on emotions and neuroscience. But one of the functions of emotion is to rewire our behavior. And so if you do a new behavior and you feel successful in reading or in getting a cab or in flossing, then that behavior, your brain will take notice, and with the dopamine regulation and the myelin sheath adjusting, it will become more automatic. And so that was just, it goes so against what the tradition says about how you create habits. And some people do it naturally, and some people find it such a hard thing to do. And there's a whole bunch of people in between. I was talking to somebody earlier today who called me, and she's a coach and coaching people in weight loss and diabetes. And she, one of her clients was just resisting celebration. She said, "What should I do?" And I said, "Well, do this. I've not studied this, so this is a guess, but we're going to study it in my lab. And I'm sharing it here because I'm pretty sure it's effective, but stay tuned. We'll do research and I'll release it on this. Is if you can't go, good for me, or woo, or way to go, or whatever you do to help yourself feel successful, think very vividly about your purpose and how reading a book helps you achieve the purpose. By reading this book, wow, this is helping me in this really important purpose. So for example, my deep, deep purpose is to be able to teach people how behavior works so they can be happier and healthier. So if I couldn't celebrate just by going, way to go, BJ, as I open the book, I would think actively, this is helping me succeed at being more effective in changing the world for the better. So that's a type of celebration, but it may not seem as contrived to some people. Just helping your brain and yourself recognize that this habit, no matter how tiny, is helping me with this larger, deep purpose that I have.
Changing an old habit or creating a new one can be challenging, but when we use science to understand the secrets to lasting, that's the key, lasting behavior change, it's clear there are ways to overcome the struggle and get the results that we want, the results that we can stick to. Thanks again for tuning into this mini episode of the Broken Brain Podcast to learn more about achieving the changes you want and making it easier on yourself and more fun for lasting health. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love to ask you for a huge favor. Leave a review or send it to a friend. Send this episode to a friend who's struggling with making their habits stick. Guaranteed, they're going to thank you for it. So appreciate you, and I'll see you next week. Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search there, find a provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.